Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station. Available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Wednesday evening, January 18th, 2012. It is now 7.01 p.m. Central Standard Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucrat, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good evening, everyone. During our live broadcast, we do invite you to call 888-773-4496. That's 888-773-4496. That's a toll-free number. You may also access the program through Blog Talk Radio, and their number is 646-652-4620. We still have that number. And you can send us your email anytime to comments at libertytalkradio.com. You can access our archive, our programs also via iTunes, and you can follow us on Twitter at Liberty Joe. Well, good evening, everyone. This evening, we are pleased to have as a returning guest Andy Sutton, who is an economist and chief strategist for Sutton & Associates, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and I do believe he's on the line. Let's start the program right now. Andy, is that you?
Happy New Year, Joe. How you doing?
Okay. Well, you know, actually, Andy, I'm doing well. I am falling apart at the seams, but I'm fighting like heck.
Okay, that made no sense.
Well, as you get, I'm going to be 69 soon. And I tell you, you wake up in the morning and a thumb doesn't work or a foot doesn't work or something. You don't know what happened. You didn't do anything at all other than a good night's rest. And as you get older, you find that there are more and more things that wear out, things that all of a sudden start hurting or whatever. And I've just had a lot of really small bumps on the road, but cumulatively, boy, it seems like a mountain. And but I fight back, and I'm having, you know, it. I've come to realize I have to continue doing those things that I have a desire and a passion to do, and don't let anything get in my way, and I will do them, you know, whatever. So actually, I'm doing very well because I'm in a good mood. I had major surgery, for example, on my shoulder, and they had to reconstruct it. The entire surgery came apart.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. It was incredibly painful. They said this would be the most painful surgery anyone has ever gone through. And they told me. They said, there is no more surgery more painful than this. Heart transplant, anything. This is the most painful. I thought they were kidding me. When I got out of the hospital, I mean, I was in so much pain for a couple of months, I couldn't stand it. And then when I went for my MRI, it became detached. And what they did is they did surgery light on a heavy-duty situation when they should have been doing surgery heavy, you know, with the reconstruction of tissue and the reinforcement and whatever. And I guess they didn't see it necessary at the time, and the whole thing came apart. I'm back to square zero, and now nothing can be done because the muscles had atrophied. Well, anyway, enough of my problems. But, you know, I've been having things like that, but I keep on going. I still ride my motorcycle, play my drums, ride my bicycle, row. I do all these things, you know. Anything that I can do, I still do. How are you doing, by the way?
I'm hanging in there.
You're hanging in there, too.
Hey, at least it's not slowing you down. Look at it that way.
Oh, heck no. In fact, my days are more hectic than ever. I'm constantly on the run. Well, you didn't call today, and we don't have you as a guest, so we can discuss all of my physical ailments. And I'm sure no one in the world, not one person in the entire world, 6.5 billion people, not one person is the least bit interested. Quite frankly, neither am I. But we have so many things going on in this world right now. I wish it would be easy. It would be nice to say, well, Andy, really, we just don't know what the heck to talk about. The fact of the matter is that There is so much to talk about. We can pick almost anything and spend a few hours on it. Let's start with something which we don't normally talk about. Let's talk a little bit about the election and how you see it going, and what is your take on this entire election and how the media appears to be ignoring Ron Paul, and to me looks like a tidal wave ready to hit the beach.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I mean, Ron Paul is, I mean, he's been around for a while now. I mean, he ran, obviously, back in 2008 on the exact same platform that he's running on today. And that's the one thing that I can say about Ron Paul that I think most people would have a hard time saying about any politician is he's always been consistent. I've been reading his commentaries and what have you since the late 90s now. And he's always said the same types of things, and it seems the worse things get, the louder he yells. And the good news is people are starting to listen.
Right.
I don't agree with everything, that's on his platform, but certainly, in this context, the economic, financial context, he's really the only candidate that has any kind of solutions to any of this. The rest of the guys, you can pretty much lump into, from policy. I mean, I'm not getting personal here. You know me. I don't even like to really talk about names for the most part.
Right, same here.
But as far as policy goes and proposed policies and, some of the things that these guys have talked about in these debates, you can pretty much lump the rest of them into the kick the can down the road camp. Various speeds of kicking the can or, various whatever. Some want to do a little bit harder, some want to do it a little bit softer, but basically you have a bunch of people that want to try to find a way to push this forward, to let somebody else deal with it, to let another generation deal with it, to let somebody else's kids deal with it, to let another group of leaders, another Congress, whatever, deal with the situation. Whereas, Ron Paul is standing out here and saying, hey, the time to really do anything was 15, 20 years ago. But we believe that or not, we still do have a chance to minimize the effects of what is going on here. And the problem is it's going to hurt. 15, 20 years ago, things could have been fixed a lot more easily.
Yes.
And it wouldn't have hurt nearly as much because the imbalances were not as large. But now the imbalances are so huge. I mean, we just crossed not too long ago, it was a couple of weeks ago, our debt-to-GDP ratio is now over 100%.
Wow.
So we're basically in Eurozone territory now. We were at 100.3%, I'm sorry. It was either right before or right after the first of the year. Everything kind of runs together for me. But that's basically Greece territory. I mean, they were a little bit higher. So what? What does it need to be, 104, 105, 110? We're going to be there soon enough anyway. So all this stuff is going on. What are they doing? They're implementing austerity. It's a colossal failure. You basically have a state, I'm talking about Greece, where they've programmed this welfare mentality where, sit on your behind, lots of vacations, largesse in the terms of, government pensions and all of these other things that are near and dear to people's hearts, and lo and behold, the state can't afford it. And
right.
It's going broke because of it. And that's exactly right. The same boat we're in. We're sitting at the other end of that boat, and nobody wants to talk about it. I haven't heard zip from any of these major candidates about any of that. I've heard them sling mud about outsourcing jobs. I've heard them sling mud about China's renminbi dollar exchange rate situation. I've heard them saber-rattle about nuclear programs here and there and everywhere else, but I've really not heard anybody say, hey, our backyard's pretty dirty. Why don't we get to the business of cleaning up our backyard, and then, maybe we'll see what the rest of the situation is and see where we're at. But there's not much of that.
Now,
I took 10 minutes to answer a 30-second question.
No, well, it's – no, I appreciate that. Now, we say that our debt is $15 trillion, but if we include the unfunded debt, it's 60 or 70 trillion. What about Greece? Doesn't Greece have unfunded debt as well?
Well, yeah, any system that has, like a Social Security type system or a Medicare type system or basically any kind of system that takes in dollars today with the promise of paying dollars out tomorrow. And this can be pension plans.
Right.
It can be health insurance. I mean, it can be a vast variety of social programs. The idea of the unfunded liability, I mean, you can have a pension system that's fully funded. There could be enough contributions coming into the system to fund that system, you know, in perpetuity, you know, may using a set of assumptions and what have you.
Right.
We don't have that. We have a situation where the inflows are much, much less than the outflows, and this is going, you know, it depends how far you want to take it out. You know, if you take it out a two-period life cycle type analysis, you're talking about 75 years, you know, our unfunded liabilities are over $200 trillion.
Wow.
You know, if you want to bring it in a little closer and say, hey, by 2020, then it might be 35 or 40 trillion. The point is, there's not enough money coming in and there's too much going out. I mean, that's really the bottom line here.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of pressure on politicians to fix it because you have so many people that are now, because we have a rotten economy, you have so many people that are relying on a lot of these programs. You know, how many Social Security recipients are going to, you know, go to a town hall meeting and say, please cut my benefits, you know, or Medicare, or Social Security disability, or any of these programs? I mean, or food stamps, or, you know, that's a popular one today. I mean, what food stamp recipient, you know, who's depending on that to feed their family is going to go to a political rally and say, please cut my benefits? It's not going to happen. And you have such a large percentage of people in this country that are dependent on government payments, whether it's Social Security, welfare, food stamps, energy assistance, Medicaid, Medicare, the whole nine yards. I mean, we could just go and name programs for the next hour.
Right.
There's so many people that are dependent on these things. It's kind of like, all right, we've got a situation where if we start cutting those programs, we're going to pretty much take the social fabric of this country and just shred it. You know, you're talking about some really bad consequences. I mean, the stuff that went on in Europe, that's nothing. You know, you start telling people, hey, you can't feed your family, there's going to be big problems.
Well, what
you do is you try to, you know, kick the can down the road. You try to print a few hundred billion here, print a few hundred billion there, or if you're the Treasury, you start stealing from the pension funds so that you can kind of quietly avoid the next debt ceiling morass that's going on right now. You know, and then you try and take that kind of a strategy, and that seems to be where most of the energy is being directed right now. Is let's just find a way to, you know, kick this thing down the road for another month or 2 months or 6 months, and, you know, we'll deal with it then. That seems to be the prevailing mentality right now.
Do you subscribe to the theory that this is deliberate by the government, in that they want people to be reliant on the government, because then the government has 100% control of the entire board? I mean, they pull all the strings, and, of course, no one can say anything because they're relying on the government for their income. Do you subscribe to that, or you just think that this is a way for a piecemeal that happens? It just builds and builds because everyone wants to stay in office and whatever, but there really is no master plan.
I don't know that I would use the term master plan. I will say, and there's plenty of white papers that have been released over the years to back this up. Some of these bigger organizations like the United Nations and a lot of these banking groups, especially the international ones, they really like the idea of having people and countries under their thumb. And when you look at what's going on in Greece and Italy, and now we've started a whole second wave. We're in like the second stage of the Eurozone debt crisis with these new downgrades. Here we had France, Austria. I'm trying to think who the other one was. There was another big one, and it's slipping my mind right now. Germany was the big one that escaped, but there was a series of downgrades last week, and that's going to hike their borrowing costs, and it's going to drive them right to the IMF, right to the World Bank, and then they're kind of under their thumb. They've got them. I mean, you just look at what happened in Greece. So you have a whole country there, in the case of Greece, you know, hold an entire national economy that is pretty much under the thumb of an international banking establishment. So, yeah, I mean, in that regard, it does seem like there's some kind of I don't know if I'd call it a master plan, but some kind of a strategy that, you know, hey, let's pick some of these people off and let's take more and more control. We've seen that throughout history. I mean, you can't argue against that.
Well, you know, I have so many friends who are sort of progressives, and they always, the example they give, they go, oh, the United States is a cruel place compared to France, where people get, you know, 6 weeks or 2 months vacation a year, and they go on the Riviera, and, you know, they're so socially conscious, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I said, well, you know, if you live there, you would be poor, you know. I wonder if this is changing anyone's mind, saying, well, maybe this doesn't really work that well. I doubt if it is, but I mean, I just wonder sometimes whether they have to have second thoughts about how wonderful it is when no one can work, no one has to work all that hard, and they work a 32-hour week or whatever it is and get 2 months vacation a year, and, you know, and everything's fine.
Well, you know, there's a word that I like to use, and it's kind of become a bad word in other context, but I like to use the word sustainable and say, all right,
right,
you have this situation where you're doing exactly what you just described, the lavish vacations, benefits, pensions, short work weeks, the whole nine yards. How long is that sustainable? How long can you keep going and keep doing that? You know, we had this situation in this country back in the 60s with the Great Society programs.
Right.
You know, and we instituted all these huge monumental social programs, and we were gonna just kick a hole in everything, and everybody was gonna be sipping Mai Tais, and there was gonna be no poverty and all this other kind of nonsense. And all somebody would have had to do back then is ask one question: how long is this sustainable?
Right.
Not very long.
Right.
It got us kicked off the gold standard by 1971, and here we are 40 years later, and we're $15 trillion in debt, and that's just what's already accrued to date.
Right.
So the answer was not for long. And I think you ran into a lot of that same kind of a situation over in Europe with some of these other countries where, you know, it was great while it lasted. I mean, it was fantastic. You know, you couldn't beat it. It was the best place to be, and it was the best thing going. It was like the housing bubble. But it ended. It was not sustainable. And I think whenever you see a new trend, economic, financial in particular, I think the first thing people need to do, especially today, because you have so much funny money flying around, is ask yourself, is this sustainable? Is this going to work in the long run? Let's look at this thing. Let's tear it apart, analyze it, do a little research, and apply a little common sense and see, is this going to be something that's really going to make it? And for a lot of these harebrained, half-baked schemes that they've come up with to fix some of these crises, the answer is obviously no. And that's why we can sit here and say, well, you know what, the Eurozone debt crisis isn't over. And people laugh at me, and then I pull up an article that I see today here on good old Reuters that says the IMF's looking for an additional $600 billion in funds to try to fight off this crisis. So, that, you know, it's not working.
You know, it almost sounds like, oh, it's only $600 million. We've come to that point where it's, oh, geez, I thought they were asking for real money. It's only $600 billion. Actually, it's a lot of money, but our psyche is such where we say, oh, geez, thank God it's only $600 billion. And that's really dangerous. You mentioned the word hurt. This is very interesting because when people hurt, they get angry. When people get angry, they vote people out of office. They even take to the streets sometimes, depending on how much they're hurting. This hurt really can't go away. We have what is called structural unemployment, where we have this millions of people unemployed with skills that are no longer needed in our economy. And then we have our economy, whose output actually is now just reached 2007 levels. We're back to where we were at the height. Unfortunately,
and that counts all the borrowed government dollars too.
Right. Yeah. That's true. That's very, very true. But we have. But the jobs that are that need to be filled don't match the skills of the people who are unemployed. We're in a world of hurt for a long time.
Can I make a really quick point?
Sure.
On that GDP comment you just made.
Please, yeah.
Our deficit back in 2007, I could be wrong. I believe it was in the neighborhood of $400 billion, somewhere in there, somewhere in that ballpark. I believe. I could be wrong. If somebody wants to find that and call in and correct me, that's fine. The point is, I know it's a lot less than it is today.
Right.
So if you look at the deficit from last year, what was it, $1.3 trillion, somewhere around there?
Right.
All right. So in order to get us back to 2007 levels, the government had to take on somewhere in the neighborhood of $900 billion to $1 trillion in new debt just to get us back to where we were in 2007.
Right.
Now, that should tell you something.
Right. So we have this growth, which is all internal growth by the government, a good portion of it. We have people who are unemployed businesses or manufacturers who are looking for people with skills that don't match those of the unemployed. I don't see this. I mean, these people are not going to go to school and relearn these skills. And if they do, and most of them can't because they're much older and they're not going to go back and become mathematicians. As I say, the STEM, you know, the science, technology, engineering, and math. These people are not going to go back and all of a sudden from a, factory worker become a mathematician. It's not going to happen. I don't see how this is going to play out. Our debt continues to rise. It's not going down. It is no way it can go down. Eventually, aren't interest rates, they have to start creeping up. And once that happens, that exasperates everything. I don't see a happy scenario anywhere. Am I just a doomsdayist or am I missing something, Andy?
Well, here's a couple comments. I just read a piece this morning about how few metropolitan areas in this country have actually been able to recoup any kind of jobs. Now, let's play a little guessing game. 0 to 100%. What percentage of U.S. metropolitan areas would you say have failed to recoup the jobs lost during the last recession?
I'll give you a guess. 60%.
How about 90?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, boy.
90%. Actually, it's more than 90% of U.S. metropolitan areas have failed to recoup the jobs lost during the recession. And the mainstream is still pushing this idea that the recession ended back in 2009, which is actually quite a bit hilarious if you really want to think about it. Unreal. 26 of 363 U.S. metropolitan areas have seen employment rebound to pre-recession peaks. So everybody else is still playing in the red.
Yeah. 90%,
more than 90% of the country still playing in the red from an employment perspective. Now, I'm going to tell you what I see in my neck of the woods. I see people building an awful lot of retail. I see people building an awful lot more retail. And I see people building even more retail. And that seems to be about it. Malls,
right.
Strip malls, restaurants, cell phone stores, this kind of thing.
Right.
This is what we're building. Now, who works those kind of jobs? And what do those kind of jobs pay? Can you support a family working at Walmart or McDonald's or, I don't know, Panera Bread or Starbucks?
Right.
This is where we're going as a country. When you become a consumption-based society, you basically go to the lowest common denominator. And the requirements are very minimal. I mean, yeah, obviously you need engineers to design this stuff and all that good thing. I understand all that. But you look at the pyramid of the number of workers that are going to be needed. You've got all these low-skill workers, and that's the vast majority of the jobs. And you pick up a newspaper, the class of 2010 is waiting tables, 40 or 50% of them.
Right.
The class of 2011, a good percentage of them are waiting tables and doing working these types of retail jobs. These kids have $75,000, $100,000, $125,000 in student loans. How does that bode for retirement savings and buying a house and consuming and buying cars and all these other kind of things? The numbers just don't add up.
Right.
When you look at the biggest portion of this country, there's a huge demographic balloon, and nobody wants to talk about it. And it's not the baby boomers. It's this glut of low-paying, low-benefit minimal skill jobs
right.
that are being created.
And but you know, and that they may constitute some of the numbers which are quote improving our unemployment picture at the same time.
Well, sure. I mean, that's a sliding scale, and that's why I always tell people you have to be very careful about just taking those numbers at face value. You really have to dig down
right.
and look at what exactly is going on. And those numbers, even if you do that, they're not very accurate to begin with. They're always going back and revising, and more often than not, the revisions are downward,
right.
you know, in terms of job creation and that sort of thing. And, you know, the unemployment rate went down, but they don't tell you that 300-some thousand people left the workforce. You know, that kind of stuff. And most people don't understand that when you leave the workforce, you're no longer counted in the unemployment numbers. You know, that's kind of thing, you know, to you and I and people that pay attention and are into this stuff, that's common knowledge. But to the average person,
right.
You know, the auto mechanic, you know, the person that doesn't have the time we do to do this, they don't know that, and it's not explained to them. So they look at it and say, oh, things are getting better.
Right. And let's stop for station identification. We're a little past due on that. If you just hold on for a second, please.
Sure.
You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. Political talk derived from a historical perspective. Not always palatable, but good food for thought. Pure libertarian talk with host Joe Cristiano. LibertyTalkRadio.com.
Folks, this is Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. We're pleased to have Andy Sutton, economist and chief strategist for Sutton Associate, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, on with our show tonight, discussing economic issues and where we are and where he thinks we're going. Please just give us a call if you have any questions, if you have any comments to make, even criticisms or disagreements. It's toll-free, 888-773-4496. That's 888-773-4496. And, of course, your comments are always welcome to comments at libertytalkradio.com. Andy, where do you see all of this going? I mean, the end game does not look pretty, although they paint a very, very nice picture. They're putting a lot of lipstick on the pig in this case. And they're saying, well, things are getting better. We're out of the recession. All the economic indicators are slightly up. The trailing, the lagging, the coincidence indicators or leading indicators are all slightly better, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Where is all this going? What happens if we stop, for example, if we continue the war, we continue the debt. If we stop the war, we have all these soldiers coming home and all these manufacturers who are making war equipment, they go out of business. I mean, where do you see this going? I'm confused.
No, this is one of these situations where we've really painted ourselves into a corner. And this is one of the areas where central bankers have really, you know, I don't believe that they're a stupid bunch of people. You know, Ben Bernanke might come across as being a bit ignorant, but you can bet your last dollar or your last Amaro or whatever we're going to be calling them here before too long, you can bet that the guys who are really in charge of this whole thing, they're not dumber than a bucket of hammers. And they understood exactly the corner that especially, you know, just focus here in the United States, that we were going to be in. They can't raise interest rates. All right, interest rates are at zero. If they raise interest rates, they're going to kill the economy. Everybody knows that.
Right.
Even the mainstream guys, they know that. Now, how do they keep the rates down? Well, nobody wants to buy this debt anymore. Well, who's going to buy it? Well, obviously the Federal Reserve's going to have to buy it. You know, or they can pimp it out to hedge funds or, you know, PIMCO or, you know, some of these other kind of people. Although I heard PIMCO's trying to get people down in the stock market. They're trying to push people into bonds. I guess they have some sale they'd like to make.
Right.
But anyway, that's an aside. But where does this end? So the Fed keeps interest rates at zero ad infinitum. It gets to the situation at some point or other where the Fed, what are they going to do, buy every single bond?
Right.
They're going to have to replace this currency eventually. My guess is it'll happen sooner as opposed to later. I'm not going to offer a time prediction on this because I have no idea when it's going to happen. I wouldn't even want to venture a guess. It could happen tomorrow. It could happen 5 years from now. But they're going to kill off the dollar. Well, the confidence has already been lost by most of the people overseas. People here at home are starting to behave with inflationary expectations in mind.
Okay.
People are starting to stockpile things. There's a real surge in that type of activity. So, and that those are all signs, you know, the gold and silver purchases, those are all signs of the loss of the perception of value in the currency. Those are all the types of things that happen when people start to lose confidence. So at some point, they're going to replace this currency. Now, what are they going to replace it with? Is it going to be some sort of a, you know, a euro-type deal where it's Canada, us, and Mexico? Or is it going to be a global thing? Is it going to be an SDR? I don't really know at this point. What I can tell you is that you will be worse off afterwards than you are beforehand.
Right.
That I can pretty much guarantee you.
Well, how do you protect yourself if this is coming down the pike? And I mean, it's very logical that it very well could. What is an average person? Now, this I'm talking about average person, a person who doesn't have, you know, $3 million sitting in the banks, not knowing what to do with it. You know, when I say the average person, you know, the average person today doesn't have much ready cash and whatever. What suggestions would you have for that person?
Well, the average person's in debt. For the average person that has cash, your best bet, every single person that's listening to this show right now, you need to look in the mirror and you need to figure out how you can live smaller. Because that's what this is going to cause, all right? The net result of this, and people always want to know, you know, all right, you know, cut through the econ, garbage, blah, 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 whatever. Tell me how this is going to affect me. I'm telling you right now, you are going to have to live smaller. You are going to be forced to live smaller. How much smaller? That's hard to say at this point. The point is, you're going to be forced to live smaller. So, now, you have a warning. You can do one of two things. You can say, Andy's nuts. He's another one of these nut jobs. You know, we put him out, you know, with the occupiers there in a tinfoil hat. Or you can say, oh, this makes a good deal of sense. The currency is losing its value. Prices are going up as it is. This makes sense. I'm going to start to live smaller. And instead of having it jammed down my throat later, I'm going to try and embrace this thing and prepare for it on my own and do it now.
Yeah. Well, let's assume our currency goes through some sort of transition, and I don't even know what that means, but some sort of transition where we go from the dollar we have today to something else or a new dollar or whatever. Right? That means that the old dollar is going to be only a fraction of the new currency or new dollar. Am I correct? Like a 4-to-1 like they did in Argentina?
Yeah, something like that. And again, the ratio, who knows what it'll be.
Right, who knows?
It really is going to be determined by what they decide to peg it against, because they're going to have to build some sort of mechanism into that whole manipulation there where it causes people to have confidence. So are they going to say, all right, we have this gold and we have this silver. We're going to try this again. So we're going to peg it at this value, and then the old currency is available for conversion at this rate. I mean, that'll determine when, or that, I should say, that'll be determined by when it happens. How far along into this debt spiral, hypothetically, would we be when that conversion took place? That would determine what the ratios are going to be. But I can tell you, just because it's happened pretty much everywhere they've done one of these things, you always end up worse off tomorrow than you were yesterday. When these things happen,
right? Well, and
so if your standard of living, let's use a 0 to 100, whereas 0 is poverty and 100 is like top crust. You know, say the average guy is living at a 51 standard of living on a fictitious index. You know, when something like this happens, he might be down to a 40 or a 38. You know, or something like that. Your standard of living is going to decrease.
Well. How the people who have cash are the biggest losers, because their cash will be
absolutely
proportionally less, well, one half, one third, one quarter, whatever the case may be. The person who has no cash and has debts, how does that affect that person? Wouldn't his that paycheck be adjusted in new dollars? So And then everything else is priced in new dollars, or will the price of staples like corn, wheat, you know, commodities, for example, would they go up proportionally, but the amount of money that people have will be proportionally lower? Is that the way it works? I'm not clear on that.
I would imagine on the debt side of things that the burden is not going to change very much. If you look at how the banking system has treated debtors, by and large, especially consumer debtors, if you look at the amount of bailout dollars that were passed around in 2008, 2009, 2010, what have you, if you look at the poor guy that's got a credit card balance, you know, they're paying upwards of 15. I think the average rate in this country is around 15%. The banks are getting that money from the Federal Reserve for nothing.
Right.
They're getting it from each other for next to nothing.
Right.
They're charging you 15% on average.
Right.
So they don't have a great deal of empathy towards the borrower in this country. So I'm imagining we go into a situation, and this is the one thing that's really new. We have never had this level of indebtedness and gone through a major currency shift. You know, this is going to be a first-timer, but I'm going to go out on a line here and say that I'm betting that if you have a debt burden under the old system, it's probably going to be worse under the new system.
Oh, okay. So those people say, I have nothing. I have nothing to worry about. I owe a lot of money, and if there's a depreciation of the dollar, I'll just owe less. I'll be better off than I am now. Ain't going to happen that way,
is it?
Yeah,
don't bet on that.
Okay.
Don't bet on that.
Okay. That sounds too good. Now,
You know what? If it works out that way, hey, that's great, but don't bet on it.
Yeah. Well, because, you know, someone's going to lose, and the more people that lose down the line, somehow there's going to be a backlash. I mean, there can't be losses upon losses upon losses. People are not going to do something for nothing. Either they're going to close down and there won't be any more businesses, or they have to revalue and people are going to owe just as much as before, but they're going to be making less money. But anyway, recently I've been seeing some commentary regarding currency valuations or revaluations, and one of the smart ways of protecting oneself is to own nickels, because the nickel is still the same weight and composition as it was in 1866, when a gold dollar bought you 20 nickels. Today, a gold dollar would be about $1,700, and you can get 20 nickels. I mean, that's the proportion. That's how out of touch, how disproportionate and warped this whole monetary system has become. It's an excellent metaphor for that whole system of monetary inflation and how we've debased our currencies. What's your take on owning nickels?
Well, you know, there's another camp that points to pre-1982 pennies, because
correct,
they're 95%
right.
Copper, 5% zinc.
Right.
I mean, really, you take a situation like this. Say, you know, hypothetically, you know, this kind of a major currency shift happens. And I would imagine, and I know this has happened in places like Argentina and some of these other outposts where some of this stuff has gone on in the past. There's usually these little microeconomies that start to spring up. And you won't have this in big cities, you know, or anything like that. But you start to get into these small towns where it's kind of like, I'll call them the old days, that type of thing where, you know, you have, some tradesmen and different things and some farmers and some dairy farmers and whatever. And you had these kind of regional monies. Some places it was, copper coins. Other places it was silver. I think I'm probably fairly well grounded in saying this, that I would not be surprised to see that type of activity begin again. And obviously, if you're one of those people that is collecting nickels, you know, if you have a few like-minded friends that are doing the same thing, well, there you go. You've got yourself a little microeconomy.
Right.
And you already have a currency.
Right. Well, I think what you're saying is that people will discount the new currency as well as the old currency and say, let's trade on our own. It's a sort of a barter system, but we'll use what currency has some value, or or method of exchange that has some value. We'll work that out among ourselves. We're local. We don't have to report this. We don't. We don't have the government watching us doing this. We can do this just like a garage sale, if you will, but on a much, much larger scale. Is that basically what you're saying, Andy?
Well, I mean, that could happen. Now, you got to remember, there's been several movements, you know, under this current system that have kind of sprung up. The Liberty Dollar is probably one of the more popular examples, and that was crushed rather violently by the government. There was a forfeiture of some of the assets, considerable bullion and minted finished coins and what have you. And I believe the gentleman that was spearheading that operation was jailed for a time. I don't have all the details on that case, but you know, that's obviously under this particular paradigm. You know, we start to see a major shift, and you know, these little things could spring up all over the place, and there wouldn't really be much that anybody could do about it.
Yeah. All right, and let's stop for station identification again. We haven't had a caller yet, and this is very unusual. On Wednesday evening, we usually get a few callers. Is there a big football game going on tonight or something?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either. Let's see if we can entice people to call in. Hold on, please.
This is way more interesting than football anyway.
Yeah.
Political talk derived from a historical perspective. Not always palatable, but good food for thought. Pure Libertarian Talk with host Joe Cristiano. LibertyTalkRadio.com.
Folks, this is Joe Cristiano. You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. We have Andy Sutton with us, economist and chief strategist for Sutton & Associates. And from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, we're talking about economic conditions. This is open mic. I mean, you don't have to ask a question regarding what we are discussing. We want to know what's on your mind. We want to answer your questions, and this program is for you. We know you're out there. We know you're listening, because I get the stats, and there's plenty of people listening. So please, don't be bashful. Call 888-773-4496. 888-773-4496. I'll tell you this. The next person who calls will get a free Liberty Talk Radio t-shirt. I'll mail it postpaid to you right to your front door. Okay, that's 888-773-4496. Of course, your email is always welcome to comments at libertytalkradio.com. Andy, what do you say to those people, to the proposition that in these times you should forego the dollar and you should own primarily commodities, especially in addition to a certain segment of gold and silver or whatever, in addition to commodities, or maybe platinum, palladium, whatever, precious metals, as well as semi-precious metals and other commodities in this environment?
I'd say to anybody who's considering doing that, first, you need to understand why it is you're doing that.
Right.
And, you know, commodities is a very broad category.
Right.
And a lot of times you'll hear them all lumped together. But there's really, I mean, if you take the commodities as a group, they tend to travel together at times. But each one of them, whether you're talking about corn or soybeans or gold or oil, silver, copper, natural gas, whatever it is, each one of them has its own unique characteristics. They are all separate markets. Obviously, gold and silver are the monetary metals, so they're, you know, they have industrial uses as well, but they're both primarily recognized as being monetary metals. Platinum, to a much, much, much lesser extent, is monetary and is more of an industrial kind of metal. Same for palladium. Palladium really has no recognized value as a currency or as a money. It's more of an industrial type metal. But you have to understand why you're getting into some of these markets, because if you don't, what's going to end up happening is you're going to read articles on websites, you're going to hear talking heads on television, you're going to get blown out of good positions and pushed into bad ones.
Yeah.
If you don't understand the dynamics of the market that you're getting involved in. A lot of people, and I'm going to tell you something else, a lot of people got burned with this MF Global thing.
Right, yeah. I was asking you about
situation.
That. Right, yeah, right.
We could do literally a whole show on registration of stock, registration of mutual funds, and how those particular items are registered or in whose name they're registered means the world in terms of who owns it. Right. You know, you might have an account with 100 shares of some stock in it, but if it's registered in street name, guess what? It counts as assets of the brokerage.
That's correct.
Bet most people didn't know that.
Right. Absolutely right.
You know, and these are things, you know, when you start to get involved in these kind of things, you know, commodities, a lot of times you're going to be doing it through futures contracts. You need to understand not only the market that you're working with, you know, whether, say you're going to do oil. You need to understand the oil market. You need to understand what drives the oil market, what doesn't drive the oil market. Then you need to understand how to trade futures contracts. And you need to understand all the ins and outs and the caveats of doing that type of thing. So, you know, this idea that, you know, we have a 101, you know, futures for dummies, get rich on commodities, I basically say to that, baloney. Now, if you're going to spend the time, do your homework, do it wisely, educate yourself, learn, make small trades at the beginning until you get comfortable, do those types of things and do it properly with due diligence, then I'd say, you know what, go for it. Because the U.S. dollar is dead. It just doesn't know it yet.
Right. Well, what about those? There's millions of people out there, and I mean that, millions, who want to do something. They're not going to learn the oil market. They're not going to learn the futures market. They're not going to learn to trade currencies. They're just not going to do it. They just want to know, what do I do with the little money I have? What do I do? How do I protect myself? What do I do? I don't have a lot of money. I have a little bit. I have a little debt that I'm paying off little by little, you know, because I still have a job. But whatever I have, I want to protect. I don't want to be like the people in the streets of Argentina. What do you say to them?
Right. Well, here's what I say to them. First of all, pay off the debt, because debt is poison. If we've learned nothing else from this Eurozone situation, from Greece, from Italy, from the United States, from Japan, all these countries, debt is poison. Now, maybe you have a little bit. Maybe it's 1 or 2% of your own, quote-unquote, GDP. Maybe it's not that big of a deal. If it's not that big of a deal, good, pay it off.
Right.
Get out of debt first.
Right.
Get yourself, that it hangs like a millstone around your neck, debt does. It, you know, I understand some people, you know, hey, Andy, you know, I got a mortgage here. I get that, all right? I'm talking about the low-hanging fruit, the stuff that you can pick off. Do
right.
it to whatever extent possible. And then if you have a little money left over every month, you know what, get yourself some silver coins.
Okay.
Go down to your local coin shop. You know, call me up. Subscribe to our newsletter service. You know, we provide the names of dealers that I've worked with for years and trust and have never had bad experiences with. And have never had somebody report to me a bad experience with, and we'll tell you how to do it. You know, it doesn't cost a lot, and that's how you go about doing it. You're doing it smart. You
right.
buy a few at a time. You get the hang of it. Then maybe you buy a few more. You try to buy the dips, and that's how you do it. You get yourself some silver coins. Maybe you want to have some gold in there too. I mean, that's a personal decision, but that's how you do it. You get yourself some real money, and you store it wherever you can possibly store it. If you can store it yourself, hey, that's great. If not, some people will do a safety deposit box. Other people don't like that. That becomes a matter of personal preference,
right.
really.
Right.
I'm willing to talk to anybody about what I recommend as far as going about doing this. And it's a subject that's near and dear to my heart. So I pretty much beg people to call up and say, hey, I'm interested in doing this. I understand the dollar's toast, and you know there's some real monies out there. How do I get started? I mean, I love those kind of questions.
Okay. Well, those people who have been on the anti-dollar bandwagon for some time now, a decade or two, and there's many people. I know people, and you hear them on mostly on the internet, not on the television, but. The General Salientes of this world, for example, and then the Peter Schiffs. These people have most of their assets, so like General Salientes says, he has 100% of all of his money in gold. And I'm not sure if he has any silver, but he mentions gold. In the event of a crisis, won't these people become exponentially more wealthy as a result of that? I mean, in contrast to the people who have just some dollars in debt, would be exponentially more impoverished?
Well, it depends how it goes, Joe. I mean, here's the thing. You know, right now, we've had from, and I'm going to say this with tongue in cheek and with the most, the biggest amount of sarcasm possible, humanly. We have had, I can't even get it out without laughing, a relatively free market in gold pricing since the creation of the Federal Reserve. Now, you and I know that that's really not the case. I'm saying relatively speaking. And we know it was fixed at $20. It was fixed at $35, $42, $75. And then it kind of floated for a while. It was beaten down in the 80s and 90s. And all of a sudden it took off for, you know, the lunar surface here starting back in 2000. Now, having said that, let's go back. When the Fed was created in 1913, a $20 gold piece bought you a fine suit of clothes.
Right.
You take a $20 gold piece today, still buys you a fine suit of clothes.
Right.
That's
right.
Pretty good for a half-rigged market.
Right. Right. That's true. Yeah.
So that is obviously a situation where, you know, you're looking at a very, very long period of time, 100 years basically.
Yeah.
And the purchasing power has been protected. Silver coins, back in 64, two silver dollars filled the family car with gas. Guess
right.
what? Two silver eagles today filled the family car with gas.
Right.
That's not quite as long a period of time, but it's pretty good.
Right.
Right? So now you take a situation where the dollar dies. It goes down the tubes. Now, you might get government come in there and they might say, hey, we're going to fix the price of gold because we don't want people profiteering and all this other stuff. We might cap it at, I don't know, $3,000, $4,000, $10,000 an ounce, whatever it happens to be. The point is, those guys aren't getting rich. That suit of clothes is going to cost $10,000.
That's correct.
Just like it cost $20 back in 1913. You see
right.
what I'm saying?
Right.
They'll be rich in nominal terms. Yeah, they'll have more pieces of paper. They'll have more paper tickets.
Right.
Because of the appreciation of their metallic holdings, but the purchasing power
right.
of those tickets has been proportionally reduced to the point where you're basically treading water. And that is the whole, and that's what I said earlier, when you need to understand why you're doing these things.
Right.
You have to. And that is why you do it. Yeah, you know what? Over the last couple of years, the cost of living has certainly not gone up nearly as quickly as the price of gold has. People have made real money in there.
Right.
You know, there's been actual real gains
yeah.
made in there. I get that. I'm talking long-term. For a long-term investment, you're looking at protecting your purchasing power.
Right.
You know, if you can scrape a few bucks off of a quick move here and there, hey, that's great. I'm happy for you.
Yeah.
But long-term, the goal here when you're owning precious metals is to protect your purchasing power.
Right, but those people who have no gold or no silver or no nickels in some cases,
they're not going to have any purchasing
power. Right, they're not
going to
have any purchasing power. Okay, so
exactly.
you may not be that much better off, but you're going to be a heck of a lot better off than most other people then. Okay, so
that's right.
Okay, all right. Wow.
You're going to be treading water while everybody else is drowning.
Yeah. I have friends collecting things that are just weird, and but some of them make sense. There's one guy who he has a batch of 1-pint bottles of vodka. And think about it. I mean, it lasts forever. It costs practically nothing. In case of any sort of financial demise, vodka is going to be
that's the money.
Oh yeah, that's going to be in great demand. The price will just adjust, or even more than adjust, supersede whatever the adjustment is. And it lasts forever. And at worst comes to worst, if no one wants it, you can drink it yourself. and feel good about it. But I mean, there are so many. I have one friend. This guy is a really strange guy, but he a nice guy, but strange. You know, he buys ammo. I mean, he's got a warehouse of ammo. This guy can sell ammo to Federal and Winchester and all those guys. You know, I mean, he's got ammo.
You just got us put on a list now. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. You know. And I'll never divulge his name, never. But, you know, it things like that. And people, I know people who are collecting certain things that you know will be of value, and they really are tradable, and they're basically hard currency. They're hard currency. And I think it's just kind of neat. I read online where this one investment banker bought $1 million worth of nickels. He has 20 million nickels in storage. And he said, I can't
lose. Here's the thing, Joe. If you look at the qualifications for what a money has to fill,
right.
One of the biggest things is perceived value.
Right.
It needs to be a unit of account. And the other biggest thing is it needs to be a store of wealth.
Right.
So if it meets, and there's some other categories that people have thrown in there, or some other qualifications, rather. But those three are generally the most widely accepted. So anything that meets those three qualifications, meets those criteria, can be a money. It could be copper pennies. It could be nickels. It could be silver dollars. It could be silver dimes. It could be bullets.
Right.
It could be, jars of, pints of vodka.
Right. Yeah.
As long as it meets the three criteria, it can be used as a money.
Yeah. I met this one guy at Starbucks. I don't know who he is, so the feds want to come after me. I can't point him out. I'll probably never see him again. And we were talking about this, and he saw me what I was reading, and we started talking. And I said, what, how do you protect your income? He said, I buy pistol primers. I said, pistol primers? He said, yeah, bullets don't go off unless you have a primer in them. And he said, the government's trying to, there was an attempt by the government, by the way, to put an expiration date on the primers. That means you buy it, and after 6 months, they neutralize or they degrade or something, and they wouldn't be any good. And he said, pistol primers take up very little room. They're very inexpensive, and no gun goes bang without them. He says, in case of a problem, he says, they'll be worth a fortune. He says, they'll be worth them more than gold. And I'm telling you, it's weird stuff that people come up with, you know? But it all makes sense. I mean, if you have that, you have some store of wealth. You have something. You have something,
exactly.
A tradable commodity. And I think
it's really strange. And this is the thing also, and this is one of the characteristics of money that I think a lot of times people forget. Money is just not this ethereal construct. It's an actual good.
Right.
It's not something that people say, well, I want to accumulate it just for the sake of accumulating. Well, no, you want to accumulate it so you can spend it. It's spent like a good.
Right.
So, any of these alternative types of money that, we've talked about here in the last few minutes, they all fit the criteria. I mean, as zany as some of it might sound to some people, in certain circumstances, in certain situations, they could certainly become money.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. I thought those little bottles of liquor vodka was just the neatest thing. I mean, and he said that one pint bottle.
Unique.
Yeah, and he said, and I said, well, how much did it cost? And he told me the price. It was practically nothing, like $35 for the case or something. He bought a whole bunch of cases. He says, I'm set for life. And it was funny, But the guy was so blasé about it. I thought it was great. I think that's just wonderful. But these people, what is important is that these people recognize exactly what you are saying. I mean, they understand that, the dollar is not as good as gold. Things could happen. And if they do, you better be prepared. I mean, that's the common theme throughout all of them. They all may have a different vehicle. They may have gold, silver, nickels, liquor, ammo, whatever the case may be. However, but they all agree that you have to protect yourself from a deflating dollar, from a debased dollar, debased currency, and possibly an entire financial collapse. Should one more snowflake fall, as Jim Ricketts puts in his book, in Currency Wars, it just takes that one extra snowflake that starts a little bit of a ripple that starts the avalanche. And we don't know, and no one can tell you which snowflake that was. And we'll never know where the start is, what starts some sort of chain reaction. And it's going to be very small. It could be somebody in Poland who withdraws some money in its obscure bank, and it starts a ripple effect. Very small, no one notices it. It's just a normal transaction. But for some reason, it starts something, and then it spreads, and when it starts spreading, it becomes the avalanche, and you can't stop it. And no one knows what that is. It'd be impossible to ever predict. I think that's an interesting philosophy.
Well, that's the problem with the way we've built this system. We've built and we've made it so complicated that there's really nobody that totally understands
right.
it. And it's so leveraged up, and it's like a rubber band. It's just been stretched out and stretched out and stretched out, and it's resting on the on a very sharp knife.
Right.
And it's not going to take much pressure for something to break. And we've seen it now. You know, this is not, you know, some kind of conspiracy theory here. I mean, we've seen tangible, bona fide evidence of exactly what we just talked about right. over the past several years. It should be very fresh in people's minds. You know, this is not some, you know, sci-fi kind of thing. This, you know, we're talking about very recent history.
Right. You know,
it's going to be repeated because we haven't learned a darn thing.
It's interesting when you hear people's response to that. They go, "Oh, you're so negative. I try to keep a positive attitude." And you think to yourself, what does that have to do with the price of beans in Denmark? It has nothing to do with the conversation whatsoever. It's like trying to figure out a mathematical formula and saying, I want to have a positive attitude and somehow I'll figure out how it goes. No, it's not going to happen. You got to figure out how it works. Anyway, but Andy, we've taken an hour of your time already. I must apologize. That for all of our viewers that we had not one call in, I'm deeply disturbed about that. We put out a broadcast and said that you're going to be on and you're very popular. I know people. I get the stats and a lot of people listen. Most times, and when I approach people who tell me that they have listened to the program, it was very good, or they get an email, I say, well, how come you haven't called in? Hey, oh, it was so interesting. I didn't want to interrupt. I get that nearly every time. And this
must have been a scintillating conversation because there's a few regulars that generally call in that
absolutely.
We didn't hear from tonight. So this must have been riveting.
Okay. Well, Andy, let me give you the next minute or two, and why don't you tell us how people can get in contact with you and maybe and how you can help them out.
Well, I mean, basically, if people want to get in touch with us, the best way to do it is a toll-free number. It's 888-633-5420. That's 888-633-5420, or they can reach us through our website, and that's www.sutton-associates.net. I think you have it listed on your website.
Right.
Those are the two best ways, and basically the kind of things that we do here really help people to deal with based on whatever their personal circumstances happen to be with all of these realities that we've been talking about for the last hour. So, you know, if you're one of those people that has debt, you know, we can help with that. If you're one of those people that has some money and is worried about it and is worried about purchasing power and those types of things, we can help with that. If you have paper assets, we can help with that too. So that's really the bulk of what we do is just working with people and creating custom solutions to help people, sleep better at night, basically, with all the stuff that's going on. And that's really my goal. Is to help people have peace of mind and to sleep better at night.
Yeah, folks, I'll vouch for him. Really, just do give Andy a call. Even if you just have a question, become familiar with his services and become familiar with Andy and establish at least a relationship. And in time, I'm sure you'll see the value in his services. Andy, I want to thank you so much for being on our program once again. I do hope that not having calls today would not dampen your enthusiasm to come back on the third Wednesday of next month.
I can't wait. I look forward to it. Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure being here.
And thank you, Andy. Okay. Thank you so much. Good night.
All right.
Now.
Good night, Joe.
Political talk derived from a historical perspective. Not always palatable, but good food for thought. Pure Libertarian Talk with host Joe Cristiano. LibertyTalkRadio.com.
This is the end of tonight's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for the financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. Ranch Acres Audiology is a family hearing practice at 3227 East 31st Street here in Tulsa. They may be reached at 918-749-7711. Call them for all your hearing needs. You'll be glad you did. Folks, you can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, folks, there is no middle ground. Freedom is like riding a motorcycle. You feel free, liberated. Your life is in your own hands, but with that freedom comes responsibility and risk. The government is like training wheels. They control your ride and every move. Don't let that happen, folks. Ron Paul has a sign at his desk that says, "Don't steal." The government just hates competition. With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.